Welcome, everyone, to episode 198 of the NBA Podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to discuss the All-Star starters that were announced last night. We're also going to discuss the implications of Victor Oladipo's season-ending injury, and we're going to try to find Mike Conley and Marc Gasol new homes. Before we get underway, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter, at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
I told you Harden would score 60 in the Garden.
It's amazing. I mean, that was, as you said yesterday, that was not exactly a bold prediction, because the Knicks are terrible, but... I'm just mad if the Sixers hadn't blown out the Rockets, Harden also would have hung 60 on them. I'm mad that prediction was right, just for the wrong reasons.
I'm just mad that I didn't put money on it.
I wonder if there were like a betting. There must have been, right? There's probably some.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like, no, there's a betting service here in Denmark. Oh, where where you can do that, like where there's something over under.
Uh huh.
Yeah, I should just take the over with Harden like the next 14 days. Yeah,
yeah, at least until Chris Paul returns.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, speaking of James Harden, he was named one of the All-Star starters last night, surprising everyone. So I mean, we nailed most of the picks. All the guys we said were locks last episode wound up being locks. Steph Curry and Harden, the Western Conference backcourt. Kevin Durant was one of the locks in the Western Conference front court. And East, Kyrie Irving, we said was a lock. He indeed was. And then the Eastern front court, Joel Embiid, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Kawhi Leonard, we all said were locks. Turned out we were right. So we said there were three spots really up for grabs. The two Western Conference front court and one Eastern Conference back court. The guys that got voted in the West were LeBron James and Paul George. And then in the East, Kemba Walker. Next to Kyrie Irving.
Mm.
Which of those three were the biggest surprise for you, Mort?
I don't think any one of those were a surprise, directly. Mm. I mean, I get it. LeBron is LeBron, like we talked about. Right. I was just going for the full entertainment angle instead.
Yeah.
And, like, Paul George, we discussed him as well. Like, he was obviously a candidate, and deservingly so, was a starter. So, I wasn't surprised at anyone. I think I was on Twitter when the announcements came out. Like, the one part where I did raise my eyebrows a little bit was Kemba, but not in a, what the hell? Like, more in a, oh, okay, they went that route, because you effectively had three candidates, right? You had Kemba, Ben Simmons, and Bradley Beal.
Right.
And I kind of thought Ben Simmons, who's become such a name brand player, that was the guy they were going with. But, I mean, nope, it wasn't, and that's perfectly fine. Kemba is awesome. So, yeah. Everything seems to be on the up and up. LeBron getting to be a captain again is, wow.
Just the votes.
Yeah, because it is. And that's only because, you know, Steph and KD kind of split votes a little bit, right. I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, also, you know, it's LeBron as a Laker. There was no way, if he was not voted a starter, that he would be a captain. I mean, neither you or I had him as a starter, not because he's not deserving, but because he's missed a month with this groin injury. But he was number one across the board, player rank, fan rank, and media rank. So that shows what we know. I mean, we said, you know, Western Conference front court was, there were three spots for five guys, LeBron, KD, George, Anthony Davis, and then, not Carmelo Anthony, Anthony Davis, and Nikola Jokic. So it looks like it literally just came down to the tiebreaker for Davis and Paul George. They had the exact same weighted score, and then it came down to who had the higher fan rank, and that was Paul George. Which, hey, New Orleans, if you're trying to keep Anthony Davis in town for more than one more season, maybe vote for him a little bit more.
Talking about? Their 37 fans probably did vote.
Yeah, they constituted all 2.5 million votes.
Look, just regarding AD, how much of this do you think, you know, not having a terrific record came into this?
I mean, he was above Paul George in both the player and the media rank. It was literally just because Paul George got more fan votes.
So it's nothing.
It's not a great look.
No, it's not, and really, like, he's so entertaining and he is so dominating. Like, right. So, what are we looking at? The fan base actually thinking that there should be that a bigger emphasis on winning should be put on it?
I don't know. I mean, I guess that's possible, or just like OKC fans are just more engaged in general than Pelicans fans. Like, you know, I voted a couple times throughout this process and I put both of those guys every time. So I didn't help one or the other either way. I thought they were both deserving, but I don't know. It's tough.
I mean, we're looking at a guy who's averaging basically 30 and 13.
Yeah.
Not becoming an all-star starter.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I
agree with you that the biggest surprise of the night, because, like, we said the other day that, like, any of those five guys, as long as those five guys were the ones, we had no beef with any of them. I would agree that Kemba was the biggest surprise to me, not only because, I mean, he was third in the fan vote behind Kyrie and Dwayne Wade, because we can't have an all-star game without some weird fan voting. But he was second in both the player and the media rank, too. That surprised me.
Well, I mean, Kemba's well-liked.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess part of it is, like, for the player rank, I wonder, because, like, the players had Dwayne Wade sixth, which,
right.
You know, we've seen time and again that the players don't take this all that seriously.
Right.
But I wonder if it comes down to, like, who they think is just the hardest to guard.
Like, oh, for sure.
Like, Ben Simmons being fifth of the player rank surprised me.
Because he was, what, too low or too high?
Too low.
Oh, come on now.
I mean, he was below Oladipo, who has been terrible for a month.
Yeah, but if you just said hardest to guard, right?
I know, that's what I'm wondering. Like, if it comes down to, like, these players are like, oh, Kyrie's the best guard in the East because he's, like, the most unguardable player. Like, oh, Kemba Walker can hang 40 on me any night. Whereas Ben Simmons, they're probably like, oh, all he does is, like, run the floor and transition and pass to Joel Embiid.
He's not actually that good. I mean, look, we still have that picture somewhere of the entire Charlotte Hornets team not looking at Ben Simmons outside the arc with the ball in his hand.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, I think that's partly why. Also, I think from, you know, we've read a lot about Kemba over the years, and everything we've read just makes Kemba look and sound like a good dude. Yeah. Like, I think that carries into it as well. Like, yeah. Kemba is just a high-quality person. Mm-hmm. And here's another thing. Like, a lot of players respect the crossover a lot. Like, yep. The one guy who can just, you know, put a string on the ball. Mm-hmm. Kemba can do that, and I think that helped a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, also, it's possible that, like, the games in Charlotte, maybe that weighed into the thinking here. It was just like, let's give the hometown guy, like, give him starting nod, which is cool. Like,
definitely.
Yep. It's going to be a very cool experience for him. I'm, like, I'm genuinely very happy for him. Like, he deserves it. You know, I guess, like, because team success usually plays in, I'm surprised that he was that resoundingly the other pick there. Because, like, I mean, Charlotte's fine. They're going to make the playoffs probably, but they're below 500 right now.
Yeah. AD is like, what?
I know. Exactly. Yeah. It's like, I need to move to the East. Who's got room for me? Boston, I'm coming.
You know what? That's an idea for a whole new episode, by the way. Because, you know, you and I have talked about at length, you know, the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
But have you noticed how many, you know, great draft picks end up West, even though the teams are stacked? Because they have to be in the lottery because they don't make the playoffs. So they can have, like, almost winning records, and then they can still end up with a lottery pick.
Yeah.
Like, just look at this year. Luka Doncic, DeAndre Ayton, and Jaren Jackson Jr. Those three ended up on Western Conference teams.
Yeah. Right. The three best prospects in this year's draft all went West.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's some things to talk about there. Like, I could totally see, at some point, some star actually looking at these going, you know, I actually don't care about the reasoning. I just need to go East.
I'm like, that's kind of why I'm surprised this Kawhi to the Clippers thing is still happening. Because, like, why would you not just stay in Toronto where you could, like, beat up on a... I mean, there are five good teams in the East.
Well, Kawhi is a special case, man. Yeah. I mean, this dude does not think like anyone else, which is fine. But, I mean, we've come to learn that his motivation is not the motivation of others necessarily.
Right. It's Uncle Dennis wants to go to L.A., so he's got to go to more L.A. or less. With Uncle Dennis. Yeah.
Right, yeah. But it's a good point. Like, back in the day, LaMarcus Aldridge decided to sign with San Antonio off of Portland. Like, he could have gone East.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see what happens with KD. Maybe he's going to go to the Knicks and swing the balance. Maybe.
I have a theory, which is, you know, Eastern Conference teams are just not that well run.
I don't think that's a controversial take at all.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the... If you look at the teams, especially the bad ones this year, the three worst teams in the East, what do they have in common?
Yeah. Horrible ownership and even worse management. Yeah.
Correct. And the Magic are right there, too.
Yeah.
Like, it's not... I think if you look at a lot of perpetually poorly run teams, there is one thing in common. It is bad ownership and then bad leadership, and it trickles down.
And it kind of fits, because when you look at the worst team in the West, it's also a poorly run organization.
Correct. Yeah, with a terrible owner. Yeah.
So it's Phoenix and a bunch of Eastern teams. There we go. Yeah. We solved the NBA.
Well, we're going to give our All-Star Reserve picks next week. We were going to today, but then there was actual news that we did to talk about. So before they get announced next Thursday, we will give our picks early next week, so you'll have those to make fun of when they're all wrong. Let's change gears, though, and we have to talk some really sad news. Victor Oladipo on Wednesday night against the Raptors went up to like block a shot of Pascal Siakam's, came down very wrongly on his knee, and immediately knew something was wrong. They came and like covered him up, stretched him off the court. Woj quickly reported they feared it was a season-ending injury, and then on Thursday we got the confirmation that we did not want to hear. He has a ruptured quadriceps tendon and is out for the season. I mean, first off, just like best wishes to Victor Oladipo. I mean, it just really sucks. You know, he missed 11 games earlier this year with a knee problem, came back and just wasn't quite the same player he was at, you know, last year when he had that breakout season. But at the start of the year, he was still magnificent. His Pacers are the third best team in the East right now. It just, the whole thing sucks, man. So, I mean, I really, nothing but best wishes, thoughts and prayers, whatever you want to say. I hope Depot can come back strong and, you know, the same player he was before, because his breakout's been one of the best stories in the NBA for the past couple seasons.
It has. It's very unfortunate. I have a question, though. Was it the same knee?
So that's what I saw. You know, there was that one guy on Twitter who was saying, like, he talked to someone. I don't know who this guy is or, like, if he had a connection in the organization. But, like, the guy basically said Depot coming off of the knee injury in December, he needed to, like, shut it down for the year, basically.
Yeah.
Like, he was just not going to be healthy. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I tried to ask my wife all of this stuff, but she's on a Mickey rotation right now, and she, you know, that means she's doing 30-hour shifts. So when she comes home, she's kind of dead to the world. So she has a day off Sunday. Maybe I could actually, she'll be somewhat awake then and I could ask. But yeah, I genuinely don't know either way.
No. It's either way, it's unfortunate, and you just have to make sure that this rehab goes the right way, that he isn't rushed back. Because if so, if this was a situation where he actually did, you know, rush back because, you know, organizational pressure or whatever, like, that's, I don't know. I'm not reporting anything. It's just like, if that's the case, then that shouldn't be happening a second time around. Obviously, very unfortunate. You know, was averaging 23 last year, almost 19 this year, but on a bum knee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's nothing to say, really. I mean, Indiana is just in a very tough spot right now.
I mean, we unfortunately do have to talk about the basketball ramifications of this, because now the Pacers are without their star player for the rest of the year. And, like, just, I think it was last episode where we were talking about, you know, the East, it doesn't nearly have the depth of the West, but it was very top heavy, and it had five legit teams that could make it to the conference finals. The Pacers were one of those five. Without Oladipo, do you still have them in that tier with, like, I think Toronto and Milwaukee are clearly the top of the East right now. Mm-hmm. And then Philly, Boston, Indiana were in, like, a slightly lower tier. Do you think Indiana still belongs in that tier, or do they move down to, like, Brooklyn territory?
Yeah, they move down. They move down. It's, I mean, Oladipo was an all-star, high-quality two-way player, so they're not just going to miss his offense, they're going to miss his defense, they're going to miss his playmaking, even his rebounding, his shot-making from the outside. Like, he was their leading three-point shooter in terms of volume, so there's just so many things that they're going to miss. But I will say this, like, I've seen a few reports initially going, or not reports, but ideas floated around by writers saying, hey, you know what, Tim Hardaway Jr. is available, now they need a shooting guard.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm just like, hold up a second, because there's no reason to take on long-term money. Like, he's coming back. Like,
right.
He's not out for the next 4 years.
Right.
So, like, if you're going to do something, like, pick up someone who's on a one-year deal.
Yeah.
Or sign someone. I don't know if yeah, they can still get the injury exception, right? Or are we too late into the year?
Not 100% sure. Like, the hardship waiver?
Right, because Washington just got theirs off of the John Wall injury.
I think you need four players out long-term to get it, but I could be mistaken.
Well, Washington had Wall, Dwight Howard. Who else? Markieff? No?
Markieff's out for at least 6 weeks.
Oh, another? Okay, I mean, yeah.
A couple more weeks. And then probably some role player off the bench that we can't remember.
All right. Well, fair enough. But, I mean, it's definitely unfortunate. So they don't really have a whole lot of options. I mean, you could just pluck Tyreke Evans in at
right.
the two and just give him, like, 40 minutes and tell him just to go to destroy it or whatever and see what happens.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think that might help Tyreke getting the start. Like, that's mm-hmm. he was accustomed to that role either way, you know, and he hasn't really been that great coming off the bench this year. So
right.
that might, you know, do something, but he's not going to be able to replace Oladipo. So
yeah.
they're going to be short on depth, and I don't know what the right course of action is right now, because you're also looking at this from a different angle that's called, you know, Oladipo's out, so what kind of sense does it make to just go after the highest seed possible? Like, mm-hmm. even if we do make the playoffs, like, it's just, let's just punt it, because there's no way we're going to move on from the
right.
first round.
Right.
And we might as well get, like, a middling pick instead of a very low pick.
Yeah. Well, Kevin Pritchard, I know someone, like, tweeted at him after the injury and was like, we're just going to go tank, right? And he's like, no, we're still going to be a playoff team. But
yeah.
So, and I mean, they, like, Indiana is just too far ahead. They would never catch up to much. I mean, like, what, they are 20 games ahead of the Hawks right now? Or no, sorry.
Yeah.
17 games ahead of the Hawks, but, like, 20 games ahead of the Bulls, Knicks, and Cavs. Like, that. So, I mean, they're, unfortunately, for those who want them to tank at this point, they're too good to fail. I went back and looked, because, you know, Oladipo did miss those 11 games in November and December. They did
right.
put Tyreke Evans into the starting lineup for those 11 games, and I wanted to just go back and look at, you know, every player's per-game stats over that span.
Right.
Evans only played 25 minutes a game then. He averaged 10.4 points, 3.5 rebounds, 3.1 assists. He only shot 34.5% overall in that span.
Yeah.
So there's very clear room for improvement there. But I just don't think, unfortunately, there's no easy way. You're not going to, like, single-handedly replace what Victor Oladipo gave you. I think it's going to be, like, a by-committee thing. I think Bogdanovich is going to get more shots. I think Darren Collison is
right.
going to have to take on a much bigger role. Corey Joseph's going to have to take on a bigger role off the bench. Doug McDermott, Thad Young, Sabonis, Turner. Like, it's just the whole team has to step up in the absence of the superstar. And it's possible. I mean, I'm with you. I think the Pacers do move a tier down, and I think, unfortunately, it probably does mean they're not getting out of the first round this year, whereas with a healthy Oladipo, they could have been an Eastern Conference Finals dark horse.
Right.
That said, I said it before, like, Oladipo hasn't quite been, since he came back, he just, like, wasn't the same player that he was prior to the injury. So, I mean, their ceiling, I think, might have been a little capped regardless. Like, he was shooting only 40.5% over his last 19 games, not including the game where he left early against Toronto on Wednesday. So, I mean, it sucks for them. I think the big thing to wonder is kind of how it affects them both. The trade deadline is 2 weeks away, but also they have a lot of free agents this summer. Like, Thad Young's a free agent, Tyreek's a free agent, Bogdanovich is a free agent, Darren Collison's a free agent, Corey Joseph is a free agent, Kylo Quinn is a free agent. So, like, they have Oladipo, McDermott, Turner, Sabonis, and then a couple of their young guys locked up. But, like, this might have been their best shot, in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree entirely. I was just looking over the numbers as well. So, Indiana is last in the league in three-pointers made and attempted.
Mm-hmm.
And now you take the highest volume three-point shooter out of the whole lineup. Like, regardless, I'm just going to reiterate myself here, but like, what are they going to do, even when they make the playoffs? Like, teams are just going to shrink the court. Like, you have Bogdanovich. That's fine, but, like, Miles Turner is a reluctant three-point shooter. Mm-hmm. Tyreek Evans is coming back to earth. Doug McDermott, despite being able to hit the three at a high-caliber rate, just does not do it for some reason, and that has been, like, a career trait from him. Like, I just don't see where you get the additional punch from.
I think if you're Indiana, your best bet is just to ugly up the game. Like, they have the second best defense in the league right now, and you just have to lean even harder on that. But that's easier said than done.
It is. And because Oladipo was a pretty big part of that as well.
Right, exactly. So, I think that's going to be their identity for the rest of the year, but, like, unfortunately they're playing in an era where offenses are more juiced than ever, so they're going against the grain in that regard.
Is this Miles Turner's coming out party, though? Like, could we look at it from that perspective? Like, maybe they just have a meeting, and they just go, you know, we need to pivot.
Yeah.
And then they go to Miles, and they sit Miles down, and they go, yo, you know, Victor's gone down.
Yeah.
Now you're in your, let me just check, fourth season, right?
I think fourth.
You're in your fourth season. You're made terrific strides defensively.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's time to come out and, like, just, we're going to feed you. We're going to give you all the shots you need, pick and pop, pick and roll, post touches, whatever. Like, from here on out, you're averaging, like, 18, 22 minimum.
I hope so. I mean, he only played 10 of those 11 games that Depot was out, but he averaged 13.7 points on 53.2% shooting, 9 rebounds, and 3.3 blocks in those games. So I hope it's a coming out. That would be a great story. I mean, that's a great way to save your season if you're Indiana, because you just gave Miles Turner a boatload of money heading into the year. I mean, if he can really break out as that, like, number two guy, like an all-star caliber player, that gives you something to really build on heading into next season, especially given all the other uncertainty with all these free agents and with Oladipo.
Yeah. I think that you have to play it that way. I don't see the alternative. I mean, you're not going to fix this otherwise outside of Turner from within, because all the rest of the guys are, like, in their prime. They're not going to go out and do something that's totally unexpected.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
So let's talk. You said, you know, they're not going to fix it internally. Let's talk about some of their external options, which is also a good way to pivot to the other big news of the week. That the Memphis Grizzlies, for the first time, will begin listening to trade offers for their franchise stars, Mike Conley and Marc Gasol, according to Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN. So naturally, I hear this news and immediately go to the trade machine, like any good NBA fan. And I came up with a bunch of potential ideas. We're not going to spend, like, a lot of time discussing every one. We're just kind of going to run down some of these potential landing spots and talk about why they may or may not make sense. And I think we could start with Conley, and I think we could start with Indiana. So before we even get into the specifics, do you think it makes sense for Indiana to at least sniff around?
Mike Conley?
Mm-hmm.
31-year-old Mike Conley.
Yep.
No.
Okay. The only reason I say potentially is because of all the free agents. Like, if you're not confident that you're going to be able to retain a lot of these guys and you want some sort of stability, then maybe it makes sense to go for Conley.
But to what end, though? What's the end game?
Yeah, I agree. That's what a lot. Like, I was trying to find landing spots for both Conley and Gasol, and I frankly think it's kind of easier to do it for Gasol than for Conley. A lot.
Yeah.
A lot because, you know, there just aren't that many teams that need a starting point guard at this point. Mm-hmm. And, like, there will be some that will this summer, if depending on what happens. But, yeah, like, Conley's 31 and has a lengthy history injury history of his own.
Right.
So that's not a great selling point. My idea was something like Conley to the Pacers for salary matching purposes, at least. It would be Tyreek, Collison to give them a point guard, Kylo Quinn, and then whatever else, like if they need to throw in a heavily protected first rounder or a lightly protected second rounder. I don't even think they should have to. I mean, for Memphis, you're getting a lot of salary relief if you want it, because Tyreek and Collison and O'Quinn are all expirings. So you're getting off of Conley's salary, but that's also probably a... Like, I don't know that it makes sense for either team.
Oh, man. So I'm in a way different camp than you regarding, like, what Memphis can get back for Conley and Gasol.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that anyone gives up a first-rounder for you know, a 31-year-old point guard with, like you said, an injury history and with that type of contract.
Yeah, I don't either. But that's why I think that deal... For, like, Memphis, if you're only getting expirings, that deal doesn't make sense because you're not getting anything to build around long-term.
Right.
And for that's Indiana, I don't know why you're not giving up like Aaron Holiday or TJ Leaf or anything like that.
Exactly. So from my point of view, Memphis have to look at both Conley and Gasol as contracts, not as players.
Yeah.
In that sense. And I don't think you can go out and say, you know, I understand that Mike Conley is an asset because he's a, you know, all-star caliber point guard.
Right.
But there are just the surrounding things, you know, contract, injury history, age. Those just drag his value down significantly. So I actually only came up with one trade that involved Conley. And so basically what I'm doing here is I'm taking on more money for an unprotected pick. Ooh. Because I'm taking on a boatload of more cash.
Okay.
And this is all through the mindset of building around Jaren Jackson Jr., remember. Because this you know, this should be the key focus. Like, everyone is so busy looking at it from, oh, what should Memphis get for Conley and Gasol and whatever. No, that shouldn't be the point of view. The point of view should be, how do we build around Jaren Jackson Jr.?
Correct.
That should be the way that we look at it. Yeah. And that's, so I wrote an entire piece on Patreon, my Danish Patreon, which is open for all the Danes that's listening in. You can go read that one. And the deal that I found was Mike Conley for Andrew Wiggins and Minnesota's completely unprotected 2019 pick.
Oof.
Right. Ooh. I get that. I get that. But yeah. I'll tell you why.
Okay.
After this season, Andrew Wiggins has $121 million left on his contract.
Right.
So that's not, I mean, that's a significant amount of money. Mm-hmm. And it's going to cost Memphis, on contracts alone, $64.6 million.
Yeah.
By making this trade, like, in long-term money.
Mm-hmm.
That is why the pick should be unprotected. So basically, Minnesota goes, all right, we do give up a gamble, because there is a way we could get Zion, but we can get out of the Wiggins deal. And we get a point guard in here who will help accelerate the development of Karl-Anthony Towns.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's be honest here, Jeff Teague is not, should we say, the optimal point guard to put next to Towns.
Yeah, and he's like, been Conley up would a lot.
Be. Yeah, Conley would be. Mm-hmm. Like, he's defensively inclined. He will let you know if you don't pick up defensively. Like, he will let you know. And he has so much knowledge about how Marc Gasol plays defense as well that he will actually go in and affect that situation in Minnesota as well, going to Karl-Anthony Towns like, hey, listen, big guy, I used to play with Marc Gasol. Listen, look at what he did. Let me show you.
Mm-hmm.
As well as the fact that he's not a selfish gunner, Like, mm-hmm. he is a very unselfish player by nature, and you know, a teacher, a mentor. He has the age and the wisdom to really drive forward Karl-Anthony Towns. So Minnesota basically gets some cap flexibility, and they get a guy who can come in and turn Karl-Anthony Towns into what he should have been all along.
Hmm.
By giving up a very small chance, very small, almost insignificant chance of Zion Williamson.
Right, right. So here are my one question, two questions, at least one question, is what do you do with Teague?
Flip him.
So what if Memphis says, we want to include Chandler Parsons in the deal? We'll give you Jeff Teague as well. Minnesota says, well, so it'd be something, whatever you need to match the salaries. I'm not sure off the top of my head. You'd probably have to throw in like Jared Bayless or something, or maybe Anthony Tolliver gets it done. But it would be Mike Conley and Parsons for Wiggins and Teague and whatever you need salary matching wise.
So Teague can opt out of his contract this year.
Right. Yeah, he's owed $19 million player option for 2019-2020.
Right, so there's basically, that's a tough one, because if you're Minnesota, you're probably hoping that Teague does opt out so you can get off the cap hold.
Yeah.
And $19 million isn't enough to the point where you go, oh, Teague is going to pick that up. Obviously, mm-hmm. Teague is going to pick that up.
Right.
Had it been like $29 million, everyone would know, okay, Teague is going to pick that option up.
Yeah.
And then it would kind of be written in stone. Mm-hmm. So Minnesota would look at it like, we don't want to give up Teague for something that is, you know, more money on the cap, because Chandler Parsons is not going to give up a dime in all of this.
No, no.
But we can get rid of Teague's contract by this summer. So I think they would balk at that. But, I mean, it's definitely a discussion. And just a brief shout out to Sam Amick of The Athletic, who did like a major piece on the trade deadline in general and how mm-hmm. tough it is to complete trades. So, you know, that we're sitting here spitballing, that's all fine and well. Right. But, like, it was said that usually, like, there's a trade done for every 1,000 phone calls
or more. Sure. So, like,
But, yeah, I mean, I get the idea of just expanding the trade so it makes sense.
Right.
The thing is, what's attractive for Memphis here is that 2019 pick.
Yeah.
And, yes, they would have to pay up a boatload of cash to get it. Right. And they would have to take on Wiggins. And, you know, I've been negative about Wiggins for a long time, but I will say this. It's not like they're getting a player who can't produce. Like, Wiggins himself is still young. He's athletic. And he will put up, like, between 17 and 21 points a game.
Yeah,
so you're not getting...
He could be their Harry B.
He could be their Harry B for a while. That's right. So I think that's kind of the major components of the deal. But what were your thinking, like, in terms of, like, including Parsons, just to get him hell out of Dodge?
Yeah, well, because Memphis clearly doesn't want him. I mean, they've
sent
him home, and they're trying... I think I saw at least someone, Shams or Stein or someone, was reporting that, like, they would love to, if they're going to dump Conley or Gasol. And I would assume it would have to be Conley, because Gasol might be an expiring, that they'd like to get out of Parsons' deal, too. Now... I agree, Minnesota probably balks at that, just because I don't think they include their unprotected pick if you have to take on Parsons back as well.
Oh, yeah. No, they don't. They won't. Yeah. Absolutely not.
And so, like, if you get Conley, if you're Minnesota, you get Conley, then you can turn around and try to flip Teague to, like, Orlando apparently still thinks it can make the playoffs. So, like, Orlando's going to make a dumb deal for a point guard.
Why not Teague?
That's my bold prediction heading into the trade deadline. Orlando is going to make a very dumb deal
for a point guard. Yeah, and so, for Teague, that's fine. I mean, you can...
Yeah, you could probably pilfer, like, Jonathan Isaac from them as well.
We have, like, one Magic fan left listening to
me. Do they have a single fan left? Does that team have a fan left?
Oh, that's a good... But I get what you're saying, but here's the thing. Yeah, that is exactly why I didn't want to include, like, a larger package.
Yeah.
Like, you can't dump those guys off in that sense. You need to be able to just take on bigger contracts and bigger money just so you can get picks in. Mm-hmm. And because that should be the priority. Like, Jaren Jackson Jr. is, what, 19 years old?
Right.
Like, right now is not the time to go for, you know, veterans or whatnot. Like, no, you get it right from the very start. He's clearly a franchise caliber talent. Like, the focus here is draft picks. If that means having a ton of horrible contracts on your cap sheet for 3 to 4 years, fine. So be it. Doesn't matter.
No, I'm right with you. I think that's the approach Memphis should take. I don't think that's the approach they will take.
No, I don't care about what they will do, because we can talk about that later on in this very podcast, and then I can sit here and laugh at them if that's the case.
Because I came up with a couple other potential deals for them. One, like, if you send Conley to Utah, they could offer Rubio's expiring, Derek Favors, who has a non-guaranteed contract for 2019-2020, and then whatever else, a heavily protected first or something like that. That's an option. I don't think it helps Memphis long term, but if they're just looking for cap relief for whatever reason, I think in general your point is right. Like, if you're about to enter a rebuild, there is no point. The only point in getting cap relief is so you can have that cap space to take on bad contracts later and get an asset. But why not just kill two birds with one stone? Send out Conley and take on a bad contract and get an even better asset, because you're helping a team with a productive player right now. Like, this is your one chance with, like, real leverage to really get a good asset. So, like, unless Utah is willing to pony up an unprotected first with that, I don't think it makes sense for Memphis. For Utah, that's a great deal. But I mean, that's probably a non-starter unless Utah is willing to give up an unprotected first. You agree?
But here's the thing about Utah, though. They need those picks. They need to have a chance to get a difference maker in there. Like, we saw what they got with Donovan Mitchell at 13.
Yeah.
So they need to make another home run, because they're too good to be in the deep lottery. So, and they're not really a free agent destination.
Right.
Like, let's just say it like it is, because that's just not the way they are.
Right.
And being able to get a rookie who can actually come in and be something is just so crucial, especially for them. Like, someone who's cheap and will be cheap for 4 years at the very least, who can be productive. And also, there's that added luxury of when you have a draft pick in the first round, you can more or less choose your skill set in terms of the guy that's coming in, because you have a wide selection of players you can choose from.
Right.
And given how this Utah Jazz team does need a little bit more offense, especially guys who can create, they can find guys in the draft like that. They may have to reach at some point, and they may have to take a guy a little bit earlier than he may should have, but look, you do what you have to do.
Yeah. The one thing about Conley that helps Utah is that he signed through next year, and then he's got a massive player option or early termination option. Either way, it's like $35 million, I want to say, for the, or no, 34.5 million.
4.4, yeah.
Yeah, for the 2020-2021 season. But that lines up with when Gobert's contract expires, and it's right before Donovan Mitchell's extension would kick in. So financially, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, because if you get Conley, you're not going to have cap space next summer anyway.
Right.
So, that's not going to matter. But as you said, Utah's probably not, like, Kevin Durant's not going to Utah.
No. Let's just say it like it is, right? I mean, when have Utah ever been a free agent destination? So you need to just take those things into account. Like, if you're trading Conley to a different team where, you know, they had a somewhat rich history of getting free agents, like, that would be a different matter altogether. Yeah. But yeah, just giving up major assets, especially future assets, for a guy who's 31, has an injury history, and that contract attached to him, it's just too risky.
Yeah. So a lot of people on Sixers Twitter, when this came out, immediately proposed Conley to Philly for Fultz, Wilson Chandler, Mike Muscala, and, I mean, potentially a pick, but maybe not even, because in theory you could sell Memphis on, like, oh, Markel Fultz was the number one pick a year ago, he's totally healthy, he could shoot, here's a video from July where he hit one jump shot. Do you think that makes sense for either side?
I mean, no.
Yeah.
I look, again, it's about lining up age.
Right.
Conley's 31, Embiid is what, 24?
Yeah, and Simmons is 22.
22, yeah. And I get the whole Jimmy Butler angle, but like that, right. Even that was kind of a stretch.
Right.
Like the whole point in Philly is to create a long-term window, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when you have two major components in Ben Simmons and Mike Conley, and there's a 9 years age difference, like how does that line up? Like then sure, they're going to be good this year. They're already good this year. And he right. And adding Conley obviously will move the needle. I mean, mm-hmm. let's not pretend it wouldn't. But is that a clear-cut championship contender?
Right. No, that's my thinking here is like, I get it. Embiid, you always have to live with that in the back of your mind. Like, if he gets hurt, the window shuts immediately.
Yeah.
So, like, I understand the desire to make an all-in push right now. But as you said, those guys are still, Simmons and Embiid are still young. I just don't think there's a move they can make this year that puts them past this year's Warriors. I don't think you have to punt on this year. Like, they're clearly not. They traded for Jimmy Butler already. But I also don't think you have to burn every single remaining asset you have to right. get a guy who, as you said, doesn't factor into the long-term plan. And, like, we've talked about it before, how it's just very difficult to build well around three guys on max contracts, much less four. And Ben mm-hmm. Simmons becomes eligible for an extension this July that we kick in next summer. Like, if you trade for Conley, all you're going to have is a non-taxpayer mid-level exception and then, you know, bird rights on whichever free agents you have. So it's going to be really hard to get a good bench. It depletes you of depth this year. I just don't think it makes sense for really either side. I mean, if Memphis sells itself on Fultz being the answer, maybe, but I think he has too much uncertainty. So mm-hmm. I don't think that moves the needle. Conley to Dallas for Dennis Smith Jr., Wes Matthews. No. I think he would need to include J.J. Barea for salary matching, even though he's out for the, you know, he's hurt. But, yeah, that doesn't do it for me either. The one, Orlando is interesting, I think.
Really?
And, well, because Orlando, I think, as I said, is going to make a dumb move for a point guard. So I don't think it makes sense for Orlando to trade for him. But I think if Memphis is trying to get something good in return, all Orlando's right. the place you can go. Because you could get, like, Aaron Gordon, DJ Augustine in something. Or, if you're also going to trade Gasol, go for Vucevic, Jonathan Isaac, and Augustine.
So basically, your entire idea surrounding the Magic is, hey, let's go to Orlando because we can just fleece them?
Yeah, basically.
All right, so if we use that perspective, fine, I get it. But if you're looking at it from Orlando's perspective, and if they're, you know, rational and logical about this whole thing,
right?
Like, again, it just doesn't make sense. There are very few teams in the league where it makes sense to add a 31-year-old point guard.
Right.
With that type of contract.
Yeah, because, like, the teams that need a point guard, Orlando, Phoenix, the Knicks, are nowhere near. At least Phoenix and the Knicks are being, they're aware that they are so far away from playoff contention that they should not be trading for a 31-year-old point guard. I really think Orlando might not be. So I think that should be your first call if you're Memphis. Is like, will you include some combination of Aaron Gordon or Jonathan Isaac or Mo Bamba even in a Conley deal? If so, let's talk parameters.
I mean, make the call, but yeah. You know, when you really think about it, it's so difficult. Even for teams that aren't lacking a point guard, even good teams where you could actually get maybe an upgrade on the point guard position, like just that contract is so difficult to acquire because you have right. to send out so much cash and right. so much talent, like where you think about, dude, is it even worth it?
Yeah.
And I don't know. That's why I think we need to look at Conley more so as a contract.
Right. Well, let's flip gears and now go to Gasol, because he is signed this year. He has a $25.6 million player option next year. He has not given an indication yet as to whether he plans to accept or decline it. There is some buzz from Mark Stein that people around the league think he's going to decline it as well. He probably should, just because he can lock in a long-term deal this summer. And as we've said before, the supply and demand of There's going to be not that many top-tier free agents and a bunch of teams with enough cap space for a max, and they're going to overpay that second-tier guys. Mark Gasol probably wants to get in on that. So you could treat him as an expiring, or you can pretend he's going to be there for 2019-20. But either way, at least 1 year shorter than Conley. I think my favorite idea so far is Gasol to Toronto for Jonas Valanciunas, DeLon Wright, and whatever else you need to make that happen.
Yeah, yeah. I think that is one of those deals that kind of came out of nowhere because you didn't really consider Toronto as a destination.
Mm-hmm.
But it totally makes sense. You know, a defensive-oriented center who can pass and shoot threes would fit perfectly well in with, you know, playing alongside Serge Ibaka, Pascal Siakam, Kawhi Leonard. And really, Kawhi is the major thing here. Is he healthy or is he not healthy? Because
right. If
he's not, this makes no sense whatsoever to go out and get Marc Gasol. But if there isn't an issue with his quad and if he's all okay and can play, yeah, this is the type of move that actually puts them, I would say, straight into the finals.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's... The question, as you said, is, like, Kawhi has now missed four straight games. They're saying it's still just, like, rest, load management, whatever. But we've been down this road with Gasol before, or with Kawhi before, that we have to at least, like, raise an eyebrow when it's this many games missed. But at the same time, you know, the Raptors are still not 100% sure they're going to be able to retain Kawhi beyond this year. Like, this may be their one and only shot to go to the finals. Because if Kawhi leaves, they're toast. I mean, you know, they'll still make the playoffs because it's the East. But, like, they're about to enter a very painful rebuild if Kawhi leaves. So this is the type of move that I think you at least consider if you're just saying, like, all right, we just have to go completely all in here.
Yeah. And besides, I mean, you know, Valanciunas is not being used a whole lot. I mean, it's not like he's averaging 25, 30 minutes a game. Yeah. And to his credit, like, he's good enough to actually warrant those minutes.
Yeah.
So getting him into Memphis might actually not be the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, I agree.
That could unleash him a little bit.
Yeah. All right, well, if Toronto doesn't make that move, I think there are still a few other places that might bite on Gasol. One of them, I think, might be Sacramento. Well, because, again, Sacramento is like a team like Orlando, where you're like, you're not going to win a title, but you've just missed the playoffs for so long, and you have positive momentum for the first time in what feels like forever. You might just make a win-now move. The question is, do you think you can retain Willie Cauley-Stein this summer? If so, maybe you don't make this move. If not...
He's a restricted free agent, right?
Right.
So but it's you like, can...
Yeah, but, like, do you think he's going to get such a big offer that you aren't going to want to? Because you could include him. Either way, you have Zach Randolph's expiring contract. So if Memphis wants salary relief, that's great. And also you bring Z-Bo back to Memphis. Every Memphis fan's going to be excited about that. You can include Scott Labissiere as the long-term piece that you put next to Jaren Jackson Jr. And then you could either include Willie Cauley-Stein, which you probably don't do if you're Sacramento, just because he's played so well, or you could put in Kosta Kufis, who will give Memphis a short-term stopgap at center, and then, you know, Sacramento doesn't care about losing Kosta Kufis if you're getting Marc Gasol.
Yeah, I mean, I get the logic of this, but I think Sacramento is going for a wing. I think that's their whole narrative. I don't think they're even going to consider a Marc Gasol trade.
Then we'll move to San Antonio.
Yeah.
A Gasol for Gasol swap.
The second one.
Yeah. Well, you have to throw in, I mean, maybe Jakob Poeltl. I don't think you're throwing in Murray, even though he's hurt.
Oh, my God. Even Jakob Poeltl is kind of like, really?
A stretch. Yeah. Well, I the only reason I say even bring up Murray is because Derek White has been playing so well this year. But... Still, I mean, that's the problem with the Spurs, is they just don't have many long-term pieces that would interest Memphis, aside from Poeltl might, and then it's like White, you can't give him up because he's your starting point guard, or Murray. Or Lonnie Walker, I guess.
Yeah, no. No. Like, no, it doesn't even make sense, even though Gasol would immediately be their best three-point shooter.
Right. right.
But like, is the entire point not combining Mark with Powell? Like, just...
Yeah. Well, because they did it once before.
Oh, yeah, I know. Oh, oh. But,
like, I don't know how you make salaries match. Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah, that's the problem. But no, I think... I mean, the point is that Powell is washed, and you don't want to pay him that much money. Okay, let's try the Clippers. And this depends entirely on how Memphis values Jerome Robinson. But you could do something like Gortat, Jerome Robinson, Luke Mbamute, a pick, a somewhat protected pick if needed.
No.
No, no, they're going
for the Clippers. I mean, look, they're trying to make sure that they have cap space this summer. If Mark picks up his option, then that's a no-go. Like, hey, Kawhi and KD, we're really looking forward to having you, but Mark, that sucker, he picked up his option. So, who knew?
Yeah. You could always possibly trade him later or just sell. No, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, no, it's just such a hassle. Right? I mean,
yeah.
No, I just don't see the upside. And again, Gasol is going to be 34. Like, Memphis really, they really have quite the challenge ahead of them with those two guys. I mean, older guys, big contracts, not going to get better. They're only going to decline. It's just not pretty. But let me hear your LA Lakers take here.
Okay.
I'm ready for it.
Gasol to the Lakers. And this one's tricky because it's really hard to make matching salaries. So you have to include KCP for the salary match.
I mean, Josh, I'm in so far.
Josh Hart is...
Oh, I'm out.
You're out if you're who? The Lakers or the Grizzlies?
Lakers.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you have to include one... Because the other... You have to include Beasley and Lance just to make salaries match. Or Rondo. But then you just legit don't have a point guard because LeBron's still hurt and Lonzo Ball's hurt.
Yeah, well...
So unless you want, like, point Ingram for the next month.
It's the Lakers. Who cares?
Yeah.
They have LeBron. I have no sympathy left for the Lakers. Like, they have LeBron James. Whatever they need, just ask LeBron to do it. It's fine.
Also, for the Lakers, the same point for the Clippers applies to the Lakers. If Gasol picks up his option. Oh, sorry, Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. We know you wanted to reunite here, but unfortunately, Mark Gasol is here.
Yep.
On a side note, that's my new conspiracy theory. Because there was, I don't know if you guys read the Shams article for DeMarcus Cousins, with DeMarcus Cousins, you like interviewed him about his return earlier this week. And there was some like offhand comment about, you know, like he's like, oh yeah, me and Anthony Davis talk all the time about how it was effed up that we got broken up, but like you'll never know what happens. We'll wait for the future. Yeah. Which makes me think like, uh-oh. The Lakers have cap space this summer, and they're going to try to trade for Anthony Davis. I wonder where DeMarcus Cousins is going. So,
man, those two were fun. I mean, they were only together for like 60 games or something, and I don't that's not even counting injuries, so maybe even less than that. But I mean, that was such a fun team to watch.
Yeah. Now add LeBron James.
I actually don't want to because it was fun to see Boogie and Brow just kind of have the volume.
Right. They still might, though. I mean, because, like, you're going to have to train
everyone. Because Chris Bosh and Kevin Love, they actually retained their usage rate when they were combined with LeBron James. That's right.
LeBron's old now. He's probably going to take a month off every year. He's like, he's doing what, like, WWE superstars do. Like, John Cena is injured, quote unquote, but really he's filming like the Marine 9. LeBron's just filming a movie right now.
Yeah, maybe.
His current injury is fake.
Look, I've said repeatedly, and I'm going to return to this. I don't ever want to see Anthony Davis team up with LeBron simply because, you know, AD needs to be his own man. And coming to a team and then starts averaging like 17-9 because LeBron is taking him. No, that's. I don't want that. I like the 30-13.
Counterpoint. Imagine the first time LeBron subtweets DeMarcus Cousins.
Oh, okay. You're reeling me in here. You're actually reeling me in. That would be fun.
Like, first fun. Arthur Fist meme. It would be so good for the next week. It would just... That's the dream.
Yeah, because right. Boogie is not backing down.
No, yeah. Boogie's just going to literally fight him in practice the next
time. Yep. Yeah, he is. Oh, God. That could actually be one guy who could challenge LeBron a little bit, which I would actually appreciate that. We have not had enough LeBron's had beef with a teammate stories in his career.
Yeah. We could do one. It's Delonte West, so that was it, right?
Yeah, because he did something that I shouldn't repeat here. Yeah.
Right. Allegedly had relations.
Allegedly.
Okay, so the Lakers are out. Let's try Washington. Marc Gasol, and you have to include Omri Caspi for salary matching here, for Otto Porter Jr. and Dwight Howard.
Otto Porter Jr. is a good player. He's overpriced, but he's good, and he's become undervalued now because he's had a bad year. And there were some articles talking about his lack of leadership and yada, yada, yada. He's a good player. He's, what, 25?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah, so 25, 26.
Yeah.
I mean, if he had been a couple years younger, I would have said yes. Because he could have been a long-term piece next to Jaren Jackson Jr. Mm-hmm. But I really think it's crucial that you kind of make sure that the guys that you're getting in is, like, within 4 years of each other. Like, or within 4 years of Jaren Jackson Jr.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's absolutely crucial, because when you go the route of getting someone in who is significantly older, you know, what's really the point? Because then when Jaren Jackson Jr. becomes like 24, 25, starts entering his prime, you know, his teammates are in their early to mid-30s. Like, what does that help anything?
Right. Yeah, I agree. So my last idea, and I know you have a similar one.
Yes.
The Charlotte Hornets. Mine was Gasol to Charlotte for Biombo and Malik Monk. Biombo, because he's a bad contract, and at least it gives Memphis a center to plug in next to Jaren Jackson.
Right. Here's my concern with that.
Mm-hmm.
Or not concern, but there's really no reason for Charlotte to do this in terms of the financials at play.
Right.
Because if Gasol picks up his option, you know, they're actually adding more money to the cap.
Mm-hmm.
Because Biombo has a player option of $17 million this year,
yeah,
that he could up it out. And question is, like, will he? I don't think he will.
Right. Something tells me no one's going to pay Bismack Biombo $17 million.
I think he sticks that, but I think the guy that you should look at is Nick Batum.
Yeah. Before we go to Batum, the only reason I say Biombo is because, Memphis is clearly not, it's still less money, but you're, like, not pumped to get him. But
right.
Charlotte's reasoning is, like, hey, we need to convince Kemba to re-sign.
And a 34-year-old center does that?
Yeah, he's going to help them win this year.
Yeah, this year.
More than Bismack Biombo is.
Yeah, this year, then he might opt out this summer.
Isn't that the most quintessential Charlotte move? A win now move. It doesn't help their long term future.
Yeah, I know it is, but I've decided to be positive and think about, like, more progressive for both teams kind of mentality. I know that teams will make really dumb moves.
I know you're being too kind.
I'm being too logical.
You're assuming these teams are acting. You're lucky I didn't include the Bulls in either of these.
Oh, I would love to see that, because they could truly do it. But here's the thing, though, they're too busy acquiring Enes Kanter right now.
For Jabari.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, Jim Boylan is getting aroused of the thought that he can just put Enes Kanter in post-ups 25 times a game.
My God, what a terrible team. All right,
it's going to happen, by the way. But why Batum? I'll tell you why. Because this is where you actually get the asset. There's no way that Malik Monk is being involved in a trade when the money is that similar. I don't think they are willing to move Malik Monk for, you know, just the idea of having Marc Gasol.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's what it comes down to. Now, if the idea is to get Marc Gasol and get out of Nick Batum's long-term contract that is, you know, a year longer, now Monk is more, you know, movable in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And for Memphis, this makes additional sense. They actually get a guy who can handle the ball and who can pass, and then they get Monk, who is a prospect. and, you know, a young guy who can grow into, like, a scorer. Batum is also kind of washed, even though he's only, like, 30 or 31 correct. Or whatever.
Yep.
But he can't play, he can pass the basketball. He can uh-huh. still shoot a little bit. And there is a component to him that is, you know, a non-selfish player. So he can come in and kind of take over that role of just being a mentor to Jaren Jackson Jr., make sure that he puts in a lot of pick-and-roll plays with him, and then you have Malik Monk developing simultaneously with all that.
Mm-hmm.
Memphis, of course, like, buys Malik Monk. That's yeah. the whole point. Like, they just, by taking on that additional year of of Batum, obviously, that's their payment. That is yeah. Malik Monk.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like the idea. I think, like, the overall reason I wanted to walk through as many of these trades as possible today is to point out just how hard it is to find a logical location for either one of these players.
Yes.
Like, it's, I mean, it's hard. As you said, it depends on what Memphis is trying to accomplish in return. The correct mm-hmm. response should be, we don't care about long-term money. We'll take your bad right. contracts. Just give us young players to build, like, on the same developmental timeline as Jaren Jackson Jr. and give us more picks.
Right.
What they will end up doing is give us salary cap relief that we will then spend on free agents that won't move the needle, and, like, we'll be a 30-win team for the next 5 years.
That's so I mean, sad.
But it's yeah. true. And, like, yeah. that's, you know, we were advocating, I remember last year after Conley went down, Gasol started getting grumpy and was like,
yep.
That's when we were like, hey, it might be time to trade Marc Gasol. Like, I remember we had probably a full episode heading into last year's trade deadline, at least a full segment where we said, like, hey, they should at least be looking around this. And we, after the deadline when they didn't do it, we said that was a missed opportunity. We said they should do it leading up to the draft. Like, this is the risk, you know, and I understand it's a small market team. They're not going to be a big free agent destination. These guys are franchise legends. They've been there for 10, 11 years now. It's painful to do this kind of thing. But I look at a team like the Celtics that made a very similarly painful decision when they gave up Paul Pierce, KG, and in that Brooklyn deal. That at the time, remember Bill Simmons' reaction to that deal? Like, he was on TV that night. He was doing the yeah. draft, and he was, like, just miserable and furious about it. And yeah. I get it, but, like, look at it, just fast forward 6 years, and look at what that deal did to the Boston Celtics' future. Like, it yeah. set them up to contend for the next decade. That's the risk you run when you don't sell early, when you wait a year too late before being a year too early on trading these guys. If you have Marc Gasol and he has a year and a half left on his deal, it's much easier to get to sell a team on, hey, this isn't just a 3-month rental, but, like, this guy, hey, Lakers, this guy can help you, like, be a competitive team, and then you could be a free agent destination in 2018. Right. You don't have to rely on LeBron just wanting to make movies to get there.
That point, though, about that specific trade, the thing was, it was expected that the Brooklyn Nets would actually be a playoff team for at least 2 years.
Right.
So, you know, Boston fans knew that they would get something. They just yeah. had no idea. Well, no one did. Not right. Boston, like, none of us did.
Right.
Had any idea that it would turn into this type of profit, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you look at it from that perspective. So, it's easy to look at that and go, oh, yeah, here's what you should do. But, I mean, all the stars were aligned
yeah.
from that trade. Like, Kevin Garnett's decline happened from 1 year to the other.
Mm-hmm.
That just coincided to be that particular year.
Right.
I mean, so I get it. I get what your point is. And I do agree that you need to move on before the general value of a player just lessens to a degree where the player actually had value to become actually untradeable.
Right.
But how do you determine that? Like, Marc Gasol is one of those rare guys who's probably going to be somewhat effective for the next 2 or 3 years because mm-hmm. he's a below-the-rim player. He's still 7'2", like 280 pounds.
Yeah.
And he can still shoot. I mean, it's not like he needs to have lift on his jump shot.
Right.
He barely raises himself from the floor. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what they do. Yeah. I'm not overly optimistic that Memphis is going to walk away with a lot if their expectation level is, hey, we're going to get both young guys and draft picks and like we're going to get like a treasure trove. No.
Right.
You're not. You're absolutely not. If you're coming into this with that mindset, then you've done messed up.
Yeah. The only way you get it is, again, if you take on a horrible... If you take on Kevin Love, you might be able to get something good in return.
That's why I mentioned Wiggins.
Yeah. But, yeah, otherwise, it's... If you take on John Wall...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, stuff like that. Can I just go back to the Wiggins thing? Just because I want to ask you this. We didn't really go into it all that much. Do you think that being able to take, what was it, $64.6 million off Minnesota's cap...
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's enough money for Minnesota to get off that cap, so to relinquish their pick unprotected?
I would think so.
Because that's a lot of money.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, teams have given up... The going rate for a protected first-round pick is usually about $10 to $15
million. Mm-hmm.
But 64 is a lot of money.
It is,
and,
right?
And if you're just, like, sure that Wiggins is not that guy, you've got Okogie, you have Covington... I would think it's at least worth... Yeah, and, like, if you're Minnesota also, you're still not... No matter how bad you get for the rest of the year, and I don't... Like, Conley will help you this year, so I don't think you would get much worse. You're still not going to catch up to the four bad East teams, and you're not going to catch up to Phoenix. So, at worst, you're going to enter the lottery with the sixth best odds, or sixth worst odds, however you want to look at it. The sixth worst record in the league. That's the floor for any team right now going into the trade deadline. That's not already tanking actively.
All right, so the sixth, you said the sixth worst team.
Yeah.
All right, that would have a 9% chance of winning the lottery.
Yeah.
Meaning a 91% chance to not get Zion.
Right. And at that point, I mean, if it's to clear Andrew Wiggins, I guess it could come back to bite you, but... It's at least worth, it's at least worth considering, I would think. Because Conley signed for at least one more year. So, like, if Minnesota wants to still be somewhat competitive next year and they don't know what's going to happen with Teague, that gives you a Covington, Saric, Gibson, Towns, Conley to build around, Okogie.
Right. But, I think for the toughest part for Minnesota is really the PR issue.
Yeah.
Like, you would have to salary dump Andrew Wiggins while giving up a draft pick.
Right.
Like, the fan base will look at that and go, what the hell happened?
Yeah. And I think that's the tough part for Memphis, too, when you're making these trades, is, like, again, I think that's the risk of having waited 1 year too long, is you're probably not going to get the return you expect or that, like, a casual fan will expect. Whereas, I think... A large part of the reason that the process at least somewhat... Like, there are a lot of Sixers bloggers and, like, Sixers writers, like, new age writers that were on board with the process from day one. Like, the old school Philly media was not, and then those takes aged predictably poorly. So I think a lot of Memphis people will be the same way. I'm sure there are a lot of Memphis people out there. I know Matt Moore of the Action Network is one of them, who's like, you know, he's defended them... not blowing it up for 3 years, but like when they lost by 20 to an Anthony Davis-less Pelicans team on Martin Luther King Day, he's like, screw it. Like, it's everyone must go. Fire sale.
Yep.
Not only these two, but like Garrett Temple's got to go. Like, everyone.
Everyone except JJJ.
Right. Yeah. He's the only guy who you should feel that strongly about keeping, no matter what. But... the point about Memphis, too, is, you know, had they traded Gasol last year, I agree, it's tough to figure out, like, when to make this. But, like, they weren't going anywhere. They were a terrible team last year. Gasol gets grumpy. They finished one game ahead, or one game behind Phoenix, I believe, in terms of the lottery standings. They were one pick away from Luka Doncic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they still got Jaren Jackson Jr., which is great. I mean, he's... Either the second or third best prospect, depending on how you feel about DeAndre Ayton.
Oh, second. I mean, it could even be first, depending on like how he ages.
Yeah, but like Luka, I just think it's...
Especially it's reach.
and from like a marketing perspective, like, I get it, Jaren Jackson's going to be a great player one day, but like, it's easier to market Luka Doncic as our franchise cornerstone than Jaren Jackson Jr. as our franchise cornerstone. Like, yeah. It's easier to market an offensively minded player than a defensively minded one. It's like why Rudy Gobert is not everywhere, even though he's the best defensive player in the league.
Well, he's defensive minded now. In a year, that's changing. I mean,
yeah.
Well, I mean, look, he did have a 36-point game.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, the guy can score the ball, and he's a prolific 3-point shooter. It's just a matter of, you know, understanding where the shots come from. Like, he was not great near the rim in college, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really looked up his stats now, but there's a lot of room for potential or growth for Jaren Jackson Jr. offensively, and I think undoubtedly he'll become one of the primary two-way players in the league.
Yeah.
So I have this thing. I think Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to be everything we thought Karl Anthony Towns would be.
I like that.
Yeah. Like, we didn't anticipate Towns would become this great of a scorer this soon.
Right.
I'll give him that.
Yeah.
But like, we also thought he would be a tremendous defender and
Right. Yeah. About that. Yeah.
About that. So, yeah. Well, a guy who may, you know, max out at like 22 points, but grab a ton of boards, block a ton of shots, play make a little bit, be the defensive anchor. I mean, I take that.
I mean, it's definitely going to be fascinating to see how Memphis approaches these next 2 weeks. Well, obviously, I mean, between now and the trade deadline, it's going to be basically all trade talk from us with some all-star stuff sprinkled in here and there. So, I mean, we'll have another episode in a couple days where we give our all-star reserves and talk about whatever trade buzz is percolating at the time. We'll also have, if Jabari Parker gets traded, we may be able to do an emergency podcast.
A live podcast?
Yeah. I just want to see your reaction when they trade, when they give up a pick to get Enes Kanter. It's going to be great.
Oh, well, they got 2 picks from Memphis.
That's true.
So, yeah.
So in the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio as well. Please follow us on iTunes. You can subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker. So check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. Take care, man.